Welcome to the Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. This is show number 21, February 25th, 2010. Wow, so this is it for February. Well, for the in-studio thing, now we got the core conversation Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're at no shortage for stuff happening in the social sphere right now. Looking forward to inserting the recording with Carrie Crawford Chisler, who joined us earlier. That was great. Find out what's going on over there with I Love Memphis. So, hey, so taking a look around at some of the big happenings that are there. Oh, we've got a little different mix up here and here today. Of course, I'm Dave.
And I'm Matthew.
And I'm Ansley.
All right. So skimming kind of the headlines and what's happening in the social sphere, there's lots of, just a quite a variety of different things going on. There seems like there's some legal things happening, not just in the U.S., but surprisingly enough, the thing that really caught my eye today was that Google, some executives from Google were convicted by an Italian court for some privacy-type issues because somebody uploaded a video to YouTube
on an autistic kid getting bullied. I don't know. Like, the way YouTube works, it doesn't seem fair to have, like, gotten YouTube in trouble for it. Because, you know, users post videos, and maybe they might violate the community standards, but the second anybody complains, Google makes a habit of taking the offending video down.
So one of the guys, David Drummonds, who's the chief legal officer at Google, he had this quote, which I think is very appropriate. He says, "If individuals like myself and my Google colleagues who had anything to do with the harassing incident, its filming, or its uploading onto Google Video can be held criminally liable solely by virtue of our position at Google, then every employee at any internet hosting service faces similar liability." Which, hey, that's us, you know, here at Luna Lab, yeah. And every other type of people that host.
Yeah, it's everybody who works for Comcast and AT&T, probably even AT&T Wireless.
Any server, anywhere.
You know, anything. I mean, you know, you start getting into even like the commercial appeal. You know, where you can leave comments. You can go create an account and leave comments and link to, you know, who knows what, you know, up there and say what have you. So, very interesting that these guys were actually convicted. Of course, that's over in Italy.
Yeah, you know. And they're appealing it, I believe.
You know. So, hey, while we're in the courtroom here, we know Yelp is heading to court from a class action lawsuit on this phenomena called extortion 2.0, which kind of came up last year as a result of like being able to pay Yelp to have bad reviews removed from their website. It kind of faded away last year, but evidently it's back on the scene, and there's other people who feel strongly enough about it to put together a class action deal. It's bad to see that kind of thing happening. You know, I think you know that businesses are wanting to get rid of this information when really if they could just respond to it, that would be fantastic. You know, we had a little workshop yesterday that LunaWeb put on for a local organization, and we were talking about how it's even quite possible that there are companies out there that are fabricating problems just so that they can correct them in the public eye.
Your most loyal customers are definitely the ones that you have wronged and fixed their problems promptly and professionally. Those people are your most loyal customers.
There's nothing more strident than the converted.
Uh-huh. So what's behind that?
Well, for instance, I had kind of a bad experience towards the beginning of my relationship with Verizon. I had insurance on my phone, and they sent me a different phone, one that I didn't want, that they said was comparable. I hated it. And they, you know, found one of the very few remaining of the cell phone I had and sent it right to me and apologized and sent me a letter. And Verizon has millions of customers, and they cared about my business. And I was very impressed with them, and I would not switch for an iPhone or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, similarly, like, I've been an Apple user my whole life, and I can switch back and forth between PC and Mac without a problem. I've had to do it for years. You know, PC doesn't feel like home to me. But the people that I've talked to who have switched from PC to Mac and had good experiences are the ones who are just like, I'm never going back. Like, I don't know how I ever used that old computer. And, you know, they're the ones who are become the major, like, fanboys and fangirls out there.
Yeah.
It's like, for whatever reason, the convictions that lead you to convert tend to stay stronger longer.
That's interesting. I know like even some authors I know that I you know didn't care much for the way they were, you know, promoting their books, and so I was, you know, start reading the book with kind of a tainted eye, but mm-hmm. really enjoyed it, and now, you know, I really promote the book myself.
Yeah.
Because you thought it was going to be this, but it turned out to be this.
Actually something good. Yeah. As opposed to just kind of walking into it thinking it's going to be all great, you know,
right.
reading into it, you know. You know, when you're talking about Apple and, you know, the iPhone, and, you know, they evidently took anything that had anything slightly provocative, any types of apps or whatnot, mm-hmm. and tossed them out of the App Store.
There are, of course, a lot of questions about that. Everybody is blaming somebody else for that decision. And really, I kind of like that they did that from the standpoint of, like, I, you know, like to look for new apps for my phone every once in a while. And if it's all cluttered up with, like, sexy bikini babes in the games and even the productivity section of the App Store, like, it makes it that much harder to find, like, anything that's useful.
But they left the Playboy app available, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's on the Playboy app.
But we've known for years,
just the articles.
And years, my whole life, yes.
Just
it's
the
all
articles.
About the articles. Yeah, that's the standard
yeah.
thing.
Of course, yeah. of course. Well, maybe Beach Bikini Babes has some articles, too.
Right.
Well, I heard the Sports Illustrated thing did not get kicked out.
Right, right. So.
But there was something here, flying, you know, looking around at what's happening. They're looking at maybe putting together this explicit category.
Yeah, and they have that on the iTunes Music Store. I don't see why they
that's good.
Wouldn't be able to do that for the App Store.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's a good point. I forget that sometimes.
And if you're looking for things like that, then that's a good place to go to find them. A couple years ago, like, ICANN was talking about creating a .xxx domain, specifically for porn sites.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, like, it would be really easy to block any website that ends with xxx. There's no guarantee that porn sites would use only that that domain. And it creates some interesting censorship problems. But doing that in the App Store is a different situation altogether because, you know, it's up to the parents and the individual users to disable that. It's not a decision of, like, your internet provider to not provide access to that.
Yeah. There's so many precedences yet to be set on this, I don't know, major evolution of information mm-hmm. that we're going through right now. It's privacy or
right.
appropriate content.
Yeah, well, from a free speech standpoint, I'm not crazy about about Apple's decision either, because, like, you know, a lot of the great books in history have been censored at one point in time because they've been considered too titillating. It seems a little draconian of Apple for them to just ban everything that includes, like, explicit mentions of sex, explicit mentions of or hints toward nudity or even swimsuits, mm-hmm. excepting, of course, Hooters, Playboy, and the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. It seems like a draconian move, and I'm not real comfortable with it. Like, what else are they going to ban? Like, yeah. I've got an ebook reader on my phone. Are they going to stop selling that because people can write books with sex scenes?
Yeah. I like the fact that they did it, only because I think that makes developers more inclined to develop for other platforms other than just Apple, who, you know, was kind of had this monopoly
right.
thing going there for a while. And it could take real advantage of that. And so you get developers who are developing things who may not know whether or not Apple was going to approve it.
Because
mm-hmm. There was no, you know, there still is no clear you
right.
know, set of, you know,
well,
conditions.
I think already you're starting to see people revert back to mobile web apps instead mm-hmm. of, like, yeah. iPhone yeah. apps or Android apps. They're creating, like, very functional and interactive websites just built on, like, JavaScript.
Yeah. Yeah, so check out the socialexpedition.com with a
mobile phone. Like, yeah. We've got a mobile version of the site up there.
For that particular platform, we've got a plug-in there that just realizes, oh, this mm-hmm. is a mobile device trying to look at this site. Let me send you a unique version of it instead of just a small, shrunken web page.
Right, right.
And I love the sites like that. Some of those sites are great. Like, Twitter has a great mobile. You just go to, it used to be m.twitter. And
yeah, yeah, there's still one at m.twitter, yeah. But that's the older version. If you go to mobile.twitter, it's
yeah.
totally different.
Well, you know, I was trying to go on the Android, I was trying to go to m. and it redirected me.
Really?
So maybe they retired the m, or maybe, I don't know.
Nice. I haven't checked in a while, so that's good.
It used to be really clunky, it had very few features in it, but now
it's
great.
Much like Twitter's text message roots.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so what else do we have going on? That's definitely of social media or social networking news.
Well, Twitter is probably going to launch their new ad platform next month. You know, it's not really news because it's a probably. and we don't know anything about it other than that, you know, Twitter execs have basically said that we're going to like what we see, but they haven't told us what we're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Like, nobody really knows what's going to happen with that.
Okay.
So it's news that they've announced it. It's not news.
But they're saying next month?
Yeah.
So March. Okay, that's good. That's good. I'd love to see a month. That's wonderful. Instead of launching soon, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, before we run completely out of time, we should jump into the interview with my dear wife, Carrie Crawford Trisler, about her I Love Memphis project.
Our guest this week is Carrie Crawford Trisler. She's a social media specialist with the Memphis Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome to the expedition, Carrie.
Thanks. Hi.
I'm not sure that you got that introduction exactly right.
Is that not right?
Well, I mean, it's factually correct. I think really, like she needs something a little more emphatic. Something like,
in ancient times, the little children danced around the stones of Stonehenge. And lo, it was prophesied that there would come a day when out from the mists would come forth a glorious awakening. With us today is that awakening.
I am so taking your Spinal Tap DVD away from you.
Wow. That was
yeah.
That was epic.
Carrie Crawford Trisler is my wife. She is entirely self-medicated. She has come all the way from Midtown just to hear you scream.
Woo!
Yeah.
Okay.
Something like that. You need to work on your hype man skills.
Yeah.
Wow. Seriously, like we've got to improve your hype man skills.
I need some practice.
Yeah. Maybe a chain or something.
Well, that was good. That was good.
Yeah.
Were you in the doghouse or something? Or?
Not
no.
really.
Yeah. That can be inspiring.
We don't have a doghouse. You know, we just let them out back.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for making it out here. You're definitely out there doing all kinds of stuff all the time, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah, day and night. So what is that stuff that you do? What is a typical...
Oh, God.
If such a thing exists.
A typical day? I may or may not... Well, I usually get up at the last possible second, put on some clothes, and I may or may not go into my office in the morning. Usually I do a couple days a week. I'll go in and spend like half a day in my office. What I try to do is in the mornings process things from the day before. So I'll sit down in the morning and just kind of read blogs and, you know, edit pictures and answer a lot of email and, you know, kind of do general daily stuff that you have to do. I'll do that until I get antsy. And then I'll get in my car and go out. And sometimes I have a plan. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes when I sign out at work, it says very specifically what I'm going to do. Sometimes it just says the usual. Yeah, I mean, I have the luxury of being able to pretty much pick up and go whenever I feel like there's something going on. And I try not to spend a lot of time in my office because I don't feel like I learn anything about the city sitting at my desk. There's only so much you can do. You're talking about a place if you're, you know, in an isolated area of said place. So
right.
I work from out a lot.
So are you still, you're still connected, right? You're an iPhone user?
Yeah, I use, I have an iPhone. I have my laptop. I primarily deal in emails. I hate talking on the phone. I hate it.
So are you one of those that's kind of adopted the 4-hour work week thing where you like you set aside a certain chunk of the day
and try that's multiplying only when that you, by 200.
And that's only when you that's the only time of the day that you answer emails. You see, I've seen some people try and do this, say, okay, I'm only gonna answer emails between, you know, 6 o'clock at night and that's it. So don't be looking for a reply from me anytime soon. You know, kind of setting the expectation.
No.
Okay.
No. I have been known to answer emails well after midnight. I have responded to people on Twitter at 3 a.m. on a Saturday. I mean, I work all the time. Like, the first thing I do every morning, and this is before I get out of bed, is check my work email. And that's really sad. But, yeah, I work a lot. I work all the time. I mean, in terms of hours a week... I don't really know, actually. I know it's more than 50, definitely, but...
Well, I mean, so obviously you're seeing results from that work. So what are some of those results? I mean, you've got ILoveMemphisBlog.com, right? ILoveMemphisBlog.com. So, and you're obviously your Twitter and your Facebook and all that. I mean, tell us about some of the, you know, results that you've seen.
And I want to kind of like, if we could, before you get to that part, kind of tell us about what the objective is. Okay, what are you trying, what's the CVB trying to do, and how do you fit into that?
Okay. So they hired me in August. I was working at the Commercial Appeal, and they hired me to go work at the CVB. And pretty much pitched them the concept of I Love Memphis, of doing a blog about the city and, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, Foursquare, Yelp, Urban Spoon, Travelocity, TripAdvisor. It's 10. Yeah, that's about right. And those are the networks that I update pretty much daily. Oh, and Mark's Menus, pretty much any review site. But they hired me to do this. They didn't really know what they wanted. They just said, we need to do something with social media. And so I kind of came up with this concept of I Love Memphis, which is me acting as sort of a badass concierge for the city. Like, one person that is a human and not, you know, a tool of the man. That's why it doesn't really say. I mean, it's an open secret. People ask me all the time what it is exactly that I do for a living. People think that, like, I have some kind of real job, which, I mean, I do. This is my real job, but it's sort of an open secret that I'm you know, working for someone, and that's made it really successful because I'm human, and I get to, you know, just be a person and answer people's questions. The objective, the CVB is really visitor-focused. Like, they want to focus on people that are planning a trip to Memphis, that are here. I mean, anybody that's considering coming here, you know, for business, for fun, for conventions, meetings. So a lot of what I do is I talk to people that I find through Twitter and Facebook that have mentioned, yeah, I'm going to visit Memphis, or I wish I could go to Memphis for this, or et cetera, et cetera. And I get hold of them and try to make their vacations better, try to help people that are stuck in town find things. I get a lot of, like, there's nothing to do here. And I answer that almost daily. And I try to combat a lot of negative perception of the city that people have. It seems like the haters all live here. It's people outside Memphis love the city, and people here have sort of a questionable relationship with it. But it caught on with locals, and now it's probably 60% local readership and 40% out of town. I'm totally fine with that, because the more local people that are into it and like what I'm doing become brand advocates for the city and can help answer questions and help talk to their friends and their networks and get them to come here too. So I have no problem. Anybody, you know, local, out of town, whatever. It's, I'll answer anybody's questions. Yeah.
So, okay. And so in terms of like results and, you know, yeah, measuring success and like how many readers, how many followers, how many fans, is that number your biggest concern, or do you have other kind of success metrics?
I mean, I do measure numbers. I mean, the numbers that I really, really care about are my engagement numbers on Twitter, how many people are replying, DMing, mentioning, retweeting. I care about those a lot. I care about my page views a whole lot. I care about time on site. I care about number of pages per visit. I care about bounce rate. I don't really care about number of Twitter followers or number of Facebook fans. I mean, it's nice. Like, I'm glad I have a large number of them, but I care more about how involved they are. I mean, having 4,800 Facebook fans means nothing if they say nothing. So page view-wise, highest month ever was last month. I got 21,180-something, 83, I think. And this month, I'm probably going to beat that. And the blog's been around for 6 months. So, I mean, average time on site is hovering near 2 minutes. Huh. So that's still, which is kind of crazy. The bounce rate of like 70% average. So it, I mean, it depends on the day. Yesterday there was a vicious debate over hard rolls versus soft rolls at the Chinese sub shop. So people like the food posts a lot.
Mm-hmm. People like food.
People like food a lot.
And unfortunately, we do live in one of the most obese cities in the world.
Oh my God! Yeah,
we know how to eat.
We do.
If we don't know anything else at the end of the day, we know how to eat.
We're big eaters.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, I measure a little bit of everything, and I also measure economic impact and general like feeling. Like every time somebody says they're going to spend money somewhere because of something I've written, that gets pasted into a big Word document, and then every time somebody says that they're going to, that they like what I'm doing or that they hate what I'm doing, or anytime somebody says anything directly about any of our social media accounts or the blog or anything like that, I hang on to that too.
All right.
So do you use a service that is out there monitoring things about Memphis, or are you kind of doing that yourself? Or?
I do it myself. I actually, people laugh at me when I do this, but these are my Twitter metrics for this week.
She's holding up like her little Moleskine Reporter notebook.
It's got tally marks. So it looks like, I don't know. But yeah, I hand count everything. For Twitter, at least, and then Facebook, you know, gives you nice metrics. I use Google Analytics for the blogs. And the other stuff I kind of go through and just copy and paste as I see it. And occasionally I'll do surveys and pull you know, kind mm-hmm. of bigger numbers from that. I try to do one every, I did one after like the first 2 months, and I'll probably do another one at a year. So
what do you use it for, the survey?
SurveyMonkey.
SurveyMonkey.
It's nice. Yeah. It's free. I like it.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest surprise since you started working there? Like, wow, this is just really, you weren't expecting blah.
People want to read it. That's the biggest surprise for me. It's like, I'm like, what? Like, why do you want to read that? Okay, whatever. It's always surprising to me to that anyone cares what I'm doing. I mean, I never take that for granted. It's the fact that I have these, like, 20,000 page views. It's like, I'm really, really glad that people care, and that means so much to me. I mean, every email I get is awesome. So
you get a lot of email as well, like from the blog, or?
Yeah, I mean, my email address is on the blog. People send me stuff all the time. People message me on Twitter a lot. I'll answer pretty much any question, usually within a couple hours. So
now, have you noticed more people are more comfortable sending you an email rather than commenting on the blog post?
Depends. I get quite a few comments on the blog post, but depending on what people want to know, or if it's something specific, or I get a lot of people telling me their stories about like living here and why they live here, or why they moved, or you know, I talk to a lot of people too that used to live here and don't anymore, and it's nice to hear from those people.
So what are your favorite, like I see you checking in on Foursquare from time to time. What are your favorite applications or tools or, you know, platforms?
Let's see, mainly, I mean, I use WordPress for the blog. I love WordPress. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. I use TweetDeck for Twitter. It's, I use Twitter if I got my phone and TweetDeck on my desktop. I never use the browser. Twitter's browser sucks. Foursquare I primarily use on my phone, and then I'll go back in and add tips through the browser. I mean, Yelp, Urban Spoon, things like that, I always do through, you know, through the browser, because it takes some time to do that. And depends on where I am. I mean, if I'm out somewhere, I mean, I'll probably use my phone. If I'm somewhere with internet, I'll probably use my computer. I have a list of things that I need to update every day. And every place that I go gets pretty much disseminated across all of these platforms. And it's hugely time-consuming, but very, very worth it.
So, and that's, generally speaking, that's going to be more focused on the visitor side of things.
Yeah, everything I do is focused on the end visitor. I mean, because even if you're a meeting planner, you're here for work, you're still a visitor. So everything I do is for that end user.
You know, how was that transition between the way the CVB was doing things before and, you know, here we are, you know, X months later? Can you give us a peek about maybe what's coming down the road, or is that?
Well, I mean, they weren't really doing anything when I got there. They had a Facebook group set up, or well, they had it actually set up as a friend, like as a personal profile, which is bad, wrong. So I took pretty much everything they did and deleted it. There wasn't much there, you know. There wasn't really anything there, and then sort of started from scratch and built, you know, all the components of this thing. And it's constantly evolving. I mean, I'm trying to finish the scavenger hunt and the breakfast brackets right now. Those are huge. There's been talk of a barbecue bracket. Don't know.
You would have to go into witness protection.
I might.
Seriously. People would get angry.
Oh,
weapons would be out.
I got somebody message me with a hashtag yesterday that said, "You fail at lunch." So, you know, I mean, I'm haters, whatever. I'm so used to people just like getting mad at me for my opinion about things. So I'm just like, whatever, man.
So I've got like one pretty pressing question.
Yes.
What do you think is the line between the right to privacy and the public's right to know?
Well, that all depends now, doesn't it?
In a lot of regards, like her job now is actually a continuation of a job she had in college, where like she would basically go and try things and write a blog about it.
This job in college did not pay me, by the way.
Yeah,
it's a volunteer job.
And one of the things she had to do was enter the Miss Ball State beauty pageant.
Oh yeah.
And one of the interview questions was, what do you see as the line between privacy and the public's right to know? And
my answer was, that all depends.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. the entire journalism department was there. It was weird.
Yeah, she's a journalism major. Like, everybody else got real softball questions, and they gave Carrie one that was...
Well, my platform was First Amendment awareness, because you have to have a platform in a beauty pageant.
Yeah.
Do something.
Hey, I was in the Miss Murray State University pageant. I was Miss Congeniality. Damn it.
People's choice.
They gave me $350 and I blew it all on books and records. But yeah, were you serious about that question or were you just like messing with me?
I need to know. Messing with you a little bit, but you know, it actually does kind of apply because you know, you're checking in on Foursquare so people know where you are and talking a lot about
stuff that I do.
Yeah.
That has been one of the weird things about this is I am no longer human, Carrie. There's a lot of self-editing. I can't say, I feel like I can't say anything sometimes about anything.
Even on her personal account.
Yeah, like my personal Twitter hardly ever gets updated now because I just don't, I don't know, it's gotten really weird. When people start walking up to you in Target and are like, are you that girl with the blog? You're like, yeah, I'm buying dog food. What's up? Like, do you have your sign? And I'm like, oh, really, dude, I'm shopping. But I will pull it out and take their picture with it because I have no shame. It's gotten really weird just in terms of, like, what I do is so personality-driven that there's very little line. I mean, I work all the time. I have TweetDeck open. I mean, I think technically I'm supposed to get off at 5, but I don't think I've stopped working at 5 ever. So it's weird. I mean, I will answer people's questions all the time, and I don't know. It's just a very, very strange thing not to feel like you have to edit a lot and to not say anything, and it has made me somewhat cranky in person. I don't know. Most people use social networks as an outlet, and I use it for work, and so it's
a weird balance.
It is weird. It's really weird.
All right.
When
there's
a balance at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us where we can find you.
The blog is ilovememphisblog.com, or you can just Google I Love Memphis. Apparently, it's really easy to find it from there because a lot of people do. Twitter, I Love Memphis. Facebook, /I Love Memphis. Yelp, chances are if you look at a restaurant in town, I'm Carrie. I'm the one that posted the review about it. Foursquare, I'm I Love Memphis. I mean, pretty much I Love Memphis on everything.
All right.
Yeah, so cool. That's me.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem.
Hey, well, that was great. And so afterwards, what, you and Carrie dodged over to
lunch at the Botanic Gardens. There's a little restaurant there called Fratelli's.
Yeah, which I guess Ansley, you didn't know that was there.
Oh no,
I didn't know.
No,
it was there.
Yeah.
The food was actually pretty tasty. I mean, I can recommend it.
How was the price?
The price was pretty fair. I mean, my lunch was about $10, which for a sit down lunch is.
Okay.
Will we read about
fairly
it?
Fairly reasonable.
On the blog later?
I have no idea, honestly.
Was Carrie taking pictures of your lunch?
She did take a couple pictures and she took notes, but, you know, like you heard in the interview, she doesn't necessarily write about everything, so.
Gotcha. Hey, I did run into a neat site called rssfriends.com. It's another one for Twitter. And you can keep track of who's, you know, following and unfollowing different Twitter accounts. And so, it's kind of an interesting little pastime to check that out and look at some of these feeds, particularly if you are maybe curious about how dynamic a particular, let's say, Guy Kawasaki, for example, and how many people are unfollowing that just because they realize, oh, this is not really Guy, and they bounce you through all top, you know, for, you know, before actually getting to the final article, and to see how many people actually unfollow someone. It's very interesting. And not having anything to do with social media whatsoever, but definitely big and kind of near and dear to my heart, is this thing, this Bloom Distributed Energy Fuel Cell Technology, which is big, big news. Check that out. You know, they were on 60 Minutes. Today they came out with some more announcements, and just a big thing that hopefully will be changing a lot about, you know, the way that we get our energy down the road. So nice shouts to those folks over there.
Very cool. In terms of upcoming events,
yes.
Tonight's the big 48-hour launch pitch night.
You got it together?
Well, I'm still, you know, trying to work some things out. You know, tweak my phrasing of a couple ideas.
You know, hey, sometimes you know, off the cuff can be good. You know?
Yeah, that's how I got through college. You know, after that, you know, Friday is the core conversation, and I guess we're going to be talking about like metrics measuring your social involvement, mm-hmm. engagement.
Yeah, and we're actually reaching out to a couple of other folks in addition to that to see if they could join us and talk to us about some of their globetrotting experiences and how social fit into that. Mm-hmm. And so then we have
Wednesday is the Social Expedition Breakfast. Alrighty. And Carrie will again be the guest speaker there, and you know, she's assured me that it will be different from what you heard today.
Okay.
Quite a bit different.
Okay, great. You know, and then, that day, I guess with the podcast coming out the day after that, it's going to feature our guest, Josh Bell.
From Into Outdoors, right?
IntoOutdoors.com. Yeah, you should check it out. They recently went live with their site. You know, if you're an outdoor enthusiast.
It's another big Launch Memphis project.
Yeah. So, hey, there we go. So check out the socialexpedition.com. Follow us on SM Expedition on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're Facebook inclined, you know, become a fan over there and search for the Social Expedition.
Right.
You know, with that, we'll see you next month.
Yeah, next month.
See you in March.
Next week. Yeah, that's not as big a deal as it seems, but do what we can. Take care.
See you now.
Bye now.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. Your hosts are Dave Barger, Elizabeth Kaywine, and Matthew Crawford Trissler, who edits the podcast. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskell, available at ericmaskell.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.
I don't know, you know, where we are here.